The Mitchell's Front Page Podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 till 11. Now on Mitchell's Front Page, the Monday Sports Panel.
And with me in the studio, Bucket. Good morning, how are you?
Very, very good indeed. It's been a wonderful weekend, hasn't it? Yeah, not only for Australians, but for sport in general too.
Yeah, especially if you like sailing. We'll get on to that a little bit later on. And Mark Heenan, how are you?
I'm very good, Mitch. Thank you, Bucket. And it's been an interesting sort of last couple of days. So obviously great news about the Australian Open and a number of Australians that have got through to the quarterfinals.
Yes, well, that'd be great. It'd be great if one of those outside type of players could come right through. As I said, a couple of weeks ago, it's always been down that, those classy three players, isn't it?
Well, we've had, even going back in the women's side, I think we even had an Alicia Molik or a Yelena Docic get down to that last eight. So it would be good to see an Australian, pull off a win or get really close to that sort of title, because it has been a bit of a drought, hasn't it?
Yes, it's just unusual, for Australians too, because basically, over the years, we've had many, many champions, on the tennis court, and to be going through this very, very long drought, I think, of real quality players. We've had players have been all right in the Davis Cup and that sort of thing, but those individual players is the ones we want, I think.
Yeah, maybe they feel the home pressure in a lot of ways. I mean, they're probably more indicative with Samantha Stosur in a lot of ways, that she hasn't always performed at home. But when you get those players overseas at the French Open or the US Open, they might not have that expectation to succeed.
Samantha's been a wonderful ambassador for Australian tennis, really. Yeah, although she sort of failed in a lot of big ones.
Now we've got a special guest on the line joining us this morning, Mark. I'll let you introduce them.
Well, we do, and it is a big time of the year with ocean swims and open water swims, and lucky enough to be involved in a few, but there's one happening on the Ballerine, which is part of the wider Geelong network, in a couple of weeks, and it's in its 11th year. It's the Rector Reef open water swim, and we've got the event director on the line, Andrew Dix. Welcome to the program, Andrew.
Yeah, thank you. Morning all.
Well, we wanted to get you on the program. We had you on, I think, last year, just talking about this open water swim, which is now, as I said, in its 11th year. And it's a little bit of a different perspective coming to the bay side, particularly on the Ballerine, because we have those surf-based open water swims in, the Rip View. And then yesterday we had the Ocean Grove Surf Lifesaving Club open water swim, I should say, on Saturday. And we had a couple of American triathletes too, Bucket, as well, that were competing at that event. So we'd love to get some, a bit of a profile there. But your swim is obviously a little bit different. Just talk us through the planning and how the swim is shaping up for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, as you said, we're in our 11th year, and we're different to a lot of the other swims in that we're run by the local yacht club that invented here, as opposed to a surf lifesaving club. But and we do that to raise funds for a number of the programs that we run at the club, where we need to provide boats for people, and their boats are very expensive, and we're a small club, so we can't afford to do it. So the 11 years ago, the idea of running a swim was put to us, and which we took up, and it's really gone to bigger and better things over the years, and is now sort of well established on the Ballerine. But I suppose our point of difference is it's really a community event, and it's really a casual, relaxed family day, and just where people from all ages and abilities can just come and have a swim in what really is probably the calmest water that most swimmers will ever get to swim in. So
I believe it was the Committee for Ballerine 12 years ago that approached you about a swim, and obviously, as you said, it's a point of difference that you have a yacht club, and these proceeds go to the sailing component, and particularly the young sailing participants as well. So just talk us through that.
Yeah, well, we started a program, and we found out that one of the biggest inhibitors to young people sailing was the investment required to purchase boats. Particularly if parents weren't sure that the kids were going to take up sailing full time. And so we started providing just little sort of second-hand boats and anything we could get our hand on. But now as more and more people have got involved, we've had to, provide more and more, but also we've now focused on much better quality training-specific boats that really allow the kids to develop their skills, and hone them. And we've had a couple of young sailors from the club are now, representing the club at World Championships in their specific classes. So, which is, the club's really proud of what it's been able to do with those young kids.
Obviously, when we think about the swim as well, we've got... a number of different components, and I think there's four swims on the day which are happening, but you go around the famous wreck, which is titled the Ozone Layer. Where did that name come from? Because it's a bit of an iconic image of the bay and where the swimmers obviously go around the course. Just talk us through how that came to being, but also the history of the wreck, but also how it got the name the Ozone.
Well, the Ozone, there were a couple of paddle steamers that used to do regular weekend trips from Melbourne to Port Arlington primarily, but also to Queenscliff as well. And one of the paddle steamers was called the Ozone. There was also another one, I think, called the Hygiena. And they, it's amazing to think that on a bay like Port Phillip Bay, that paddle steamers would have been a form of transport, but they were. And the Ozone, when it ceased service, was towed to Indented Head to create a breakwater to help provide some shelter in one of the bays. So it was actually sunk here to provide a breakwater. But all that's left now is one of the paddles and some of the structure. But in its early days, they used to hold dances on it and all sorts of things before it sort of broke up.
And this year, as I said, you've got the 11th year, and I believe this event is normally one of the sort of final events on the Ballerine in terms of the summer-based open water swims. So the 8th of February. Is it always been held in February in the last 11 years? Is there a bit of an attachment to the Australia Day? Because obviously Australia Day, you've got the Australia Day flags, but you've got a number of other people that come down to the area. So you're attracting many different people throughout the course of the bay areas, not just the Corio side of the bay, but also, Port Phillip Bay and the Mornington Peninsula.
Yeah, well, when we first started, we were in March on the Labor Day weekend, and we ran there for about the first half a dozen years, and then we were approached at the time that the Sunset Run was being set up to move the event and coordinate so that we were able to operate both events on the one weekend and make it a big Northern Bellarine sporting weekend. And since then, we've worked with the run organisers and run the event on the same weekend. Last year we ran the swim on the Sunday with the run being on the Saturday night. This year we've moved it so that the swim is actually in the morning on the Saturday, and then if you're really keen, you could back up with a run along the Bellarine foreshore that evening. But the key of the move to February was so that we could offer two different but compatible events to people that wanted to come and visit the Bellarine. And as you said, we get people coming from all parts of Victoria to compete in the event, which is great for us and great for the local community.
Well, thank you so much for your time on 94.7 The Pulse on Mitchell's Front Page, Andrew Dix. So you're the event director of the Wreck to Reef. So Wreck and then the number 2 Reef. And obviously, it's an important fundraiser for the Indented Head Yacht Club to help the young sailing program. We thank you for coming on, and we look forward to the event in a couple of weeks to wrap up our swim series on the Ballerine.
Yeah, well, thank you. Thank you very much for that. And obviously, as a yacht club, any of your listeners that are keen on giving sailing a go, any Saturday for the next couple of months, come down and give it a try. We'll be there and be there ready for you.
What time's that on a Saturday?
10 o'clock on a Saturday morning. So runs all of the next series runs all of school term one every Saturday morning from 10 a.m.
All right. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you very much.
Andrew Dix there. Has any one of you ever tried sailing?
A little bit when I was younger, but I can't say I ventured that far out into the open water, and I was probably more likely to be in a pool, not the open water. Generally, enough of my time is spent at the surf club, but I actually would be out on a board or a paddle steamer or a boat. Swimming out in the open water or the ocean is not terribly something that I want to stay out there for too long if I don't have a flotation device.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Right, we better talk about the AFL club that we're reviewing this week, and we've been cascading down the list, and now we're up to Port Adelaide Power.
Yes, looking at the Port Adelaide side, you know, they won 11 this year and lost 11. That tells you something about their, you know, being consistent, you know, right throughout the season. But, you know, but when they played well, they are a pretty handy sort of a side, you know. And basically one of the problems they had was winning at home. They only won 6 and lost 5 at home. So, therefore, you've got to say that was a big loss for the area. But, you know, but their brilliance, you know, and the record of the coach, Hinkley. Gee whiz, it's pretty interesting with Hinkley. He's had 148 wins for 88 losses. You know, he really stands up as a coach. And since they joined the competition, the whole club in general, they've had a total of 518 wins, 253 losses. So, and they've played in 23 finals for 11 wins. So therefore, yeah, like, it's not a bad effort by a club, although their history goes back a long, long way before they joined the competition.
It does. I mean, the Port Adelaide Magpies, and I think in Adelaide, if you sort of can't be on two sides of the equator, can you? Yeah. I suppose you can be, but in the sense that you're Adelaide or you're Port Adelaide, and there's that sort of, they are the Collingwood in some ways of South Australia.
Like the other area too. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Their coaching staff only has very low numbers, only 5. Well, most other clubs will have 8 to 10, you know, like members on the coaching side. So they're sort of stuck with fewer numbers there, and perhaps, well, they may need to change things.
Well, you never know. I think there's always a bit of pressure on Port Adelaide because they've probably been in that mid zone for a while. I mean, if we look at last year, they finished 10th.
Yeah.
I mean, did you even know Connor Rosie was the leading goal kicker with 29 goals? Famous name from this region as well, from the wider sort of Geelong Surf Coast region in Travis Boak. Yeah. He was he won the John Cale medal. And, you know, obviously seems to just get better as he gets a little bit older, and obviously people probably know him a lot for their off field side as well. Like, they've got some well known supporters. If you look at the tennis situation at the moment, Roger Rashid and Darren Cahill, they're well known Port Adelaide supporters. They've been on the board as well. They've got Koshy, who's the president, David Koch, and Keith Thomas, who's the CEO, and as you said, Ken Hinkley, you know, well known name, and you know, Ken Hinkley applied his craft and applied his craft in the coaching side of things before Port Adelaide on the Gold Coast, and used to see him come back on flights and that sort of thing when I used to live up there, and you know, originally from Geelong, but you know, he hasn't always been dealt the best of cards with, you know, certain things. You know, the South Australia football environment can be quite cruel to the natives or the people that are outside of town. I mean, you hear about coaches like Robert Shaw getting eggs thrown on his car and just all those sorts of things, particularly if you weren't a South Australian.
Yeah. I think this year, when they went to the draft, they've come away with 7 new players, and Jackson Mead is one of them, the son of a famous footballer in South Australia. And gee whiz, if they can find another one or two players to fit into those roles, for sure they've lost a couple of players, but that's what you've got to do. And but the one thing that they've just got to do all the time, they've got to just stay in touch with you if the finals don't get into these gaps like they have in the past, and be more solid.
I think they're one of those teams that the leaders need to stand up, and unfortunately last year I believe Ollie Wines before the start of the season, and you know, Kane Corns on a rival radio station was talking about this, and in the sense that he would mention, you know, he was involved in a water skiing accident on the eve of the season. He was the captain, and then this year they've got Tom Yonis as well. So we're not just talking about Travis Boak, but they need those leaders to stand up, don't they? I think if their leaders stand up, they will be definitely in the finals frame.
Yeah, I think you're touching on a very valid point there, because they had a half a dozen players who are out for a couple of weeks at a time, and that upsets the balance of any side. When they're quality players, you really can't afford to have your good players being out injured for too long.
Oh, absolutely. And I would always suggest that, particularly playing at the Adelaide Oval, if they can win half of their home games, or I should say majority of their home games, they're always going to be with a show to make finals. So, look, what do you think Port Adelaide needs to maybe push above that sort of mid zone where they're sort of hovering around the finals to get into, maybe a top six, top four?
Well, basically, you can't knock their overall record, for winning home and away games. But at the same time, there was times that, they were a pretty ordinary side, and they've got to get that little area right out of their game somewhere and be a solid side. Get those wins on the board. Don't wait, to the last two or three games to show a bit of form. Get them early and go on with it then.
Yeah, they had some good wins too. I think one that comes to mind last season was against Essendon by 10 goals at Marvel Stadium. So generally a side like Port Adelaide, probably when they don't have the drawing power, particularly when they come over to Victoria with crowds and that sort of thing, and even though they do have a good home supporter base, is that they will, if they can win those types of games, they will be a contender. I'm not sure if you've seen their draw this year, but obviously the showdown's obviously going to be a key game, isn't it?
Well, in every state now, we have these type of game showdowns, don't they? They're for financial reasons. There's no shadow of doubt about that. But at the same time, it can handicap you because you might be up against a fellow real top side.
And I think they're one of those teams too. They have to do a lot of travel. It might be a little bit mistaken for a Western Australian team, but they're always the team that is playing. If you look at it, the last few seasons, they've played in Northern Territory, they've played in China, they've had to do a bit of travel. They generally play a lot in Tasmania too.
True,
yes. So they are a bit of a travelling roadshow side.
Well, basically, they seem to be, I certainly agree with you, that they seem to lack that support, at away games and things like that. But when they're on a roll, it's just like the Fremantle, supporters, that they can really rise and make a lot of noise, I can tell you.
Absolutely. And I think, having that strong coaching appointment, Ken Hinckley seems to be a guy really is he galvanises the players in a lot of ways, and it gets a bit emotional over in Port Adelaide, and particularly when they have those wins in the showdown, it can really shape their season.
You've been around a lot of teams over a period of time, but they have only five on the coaching list. It seems a bit low to me, because I don't know where that really works, because, they got Michael Voss there, a very experienced man for sure, but gee whiz, I'd like to see perhaps a few more opinions in there.
I reckon in the Essendon box last year, I saw about 20 blokes in the box in the coaching side, and everyone was saying, geez, that's a lot of people.
And they also had guys out on the ground coaching the players too, didn't they?
Certainly did.
So where do we think Port Adelaide will finish in the upcoming season?
I think it depends on how they've drafted. They've brought in new players, but all those players have got to click, don't they? We don't just want one. We want three or four out of them, because the unknown quality of a team is in your young players, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think even players like Ollie Wines, playing him outside the captaincy, he might relish that. They've definitely got, the Robbie Grays, the Ollie Wines. You want to just see him perform. And in a lot of ways, it might do them well for him not to have that extra responsibility in being captain. So my prediction would be between 6th and 12th.
Yeah, well, I reckon I'll finish outside the 8th myself, again, because you've got to rely on the talent coming out of the untried stuff.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. We'll see how it plays out. But as you say, a lot of variables there depending on how the new recruits click. Now, we should probably pay tribute to Kobe Bryant, who died in that helicopter crash. I wasn't a very big NBA person, so I didn't see a lot of his work, but tragic for someone to die at just 41 years of age.
Absolutely, and what a well-known Lakers name. I mean, you really look at some of the gods of the NBA, and he's definitely up there with LeBron James and Michael Jordan and Shaquille O'Neal, just all those names. And Yeah, a bit of a tragedy overnight. Just woke up to it this morning, and obviously, I think there were five people that died in the helicopter crash. His daughter
was in it. Yeah.
So, really, a tragic circumstance. And obviously, I've just been seeing some updates on the Twitter feeds and that sort of thing. And they're already paying, you know, a minute's silence to him at the NBA games. And you know, it's just one of those things when you hear something like that, you almost think, is it true? Yeah. You know, is it false? And then you just keep getting all these news. And I know when obviously Danny Frawley passed away, you were like, oh, did this actually happen? Was there an accident? And then you hear this as well and you think, is this just a nightmare, or is it absolutely true? And then, yeah, you just hear more updates coming and you sense the reality of the situation.
Yeah, spokes like him has put basketball right on the map, because interest from Australia about American basketball is very, very high. There's one particular radio station, gee, they give it a huge coverage, like overnight and that type of stuff. You know, it's there's been some great individuals, isn't there, in that sport?
There has. And, you know, particularly in Los Angeles, obviously, you've got it's one of the major cities in the US, and to have two teams, you know, the LA Clippers and the Lakers. And, look, I'm not sure which number he had, but even Nick Kyrgios at the Australian Tennis Open, I saw him with a Lakers top when he was doing a press conference, Mitch. I'm not sure if you saw that, but, you know, just he's a really big basketball fan, and, you know, the Lakers have a certain persona, and, you know, even some of those games that they have in LA, they get their movie stars and, Jack Nicholson types, and, you know, to come to those games, and Kobe Bryant obviously puts that, franchise on the map.
Yes, I think that trend is starting to come across in Australia too, where bringing their stars from other off the stage or from other sports and that to come along to games and help to get the normal person along there.
Yeah, and he was a five-time NBA champion and a two-time NBA Finals MVP and a most valuable player and an 18-time NBA All-Star. So, look, what a massive name in the sport of basketball worldwide, not just in America.
Yeah. I dare say they'll make a film of his game career, because it'll be a wonderful career too, because in the past they've done those sort of things, haven't they? And, acknowledge, how good these guys were.
Absolutely.
So, yes, we pay tribute to him and, of course, thoughts with his family. Now, the Australian Open, have you been watching that? How's it performed? And, of course, we have to mention that Ash Barty received the accolade of Young Australian of the Year in the Australia Day recognition on Saturday night.
Yeah, what a wonderful award for Ash Barty. I mean, obviously, it was a pretty close game on the weekend. I think it was her opponent was Risk.
Yeah.
And, obviously, Ash Barty, whether or not she always starts the game or her tennis set one in the right fashion, there's always a coming back in some ways, and I think she draws on that crowd in a lot of ways, and she's really got an extra advantage. I don't think that she feels the pressure like some of the other Australian tennis players do. Is that she really just enjoys the adulation that she gets, and she's very humble.
And she's a very, very cool player too, isn't she? There's no messing around, throwing the racket away and things like that, is there?
No. Her behaviour is fantastic at the best of times. Yeah. But we have to mention Nick Kyrgios. I mean, he has got through to the quarterfinal. He's got Rafa tonight.
Well, basically, I've turned off. I haven't come back on him. I think he's doing something a bit different about his career, isn't he?
Well, he is. I mean, he's been pretty fanatical about maybe not the right word, but he's got on the right foot about the situation with the bushfires. And I know Mitch has been talking about it today, where the funds have been going to, but in a lot of ways it's great to see that he's started that donation tally in some ways. Yeah. And I think I haven't seen as many tantrums from him this year.
No, well, that's what I was sort of pointing to, and it's been good too, because we don't want any player, throwing the racket around, do we?
Absolutely. And I don't know if Mitch gets a chance, but Geelong played Essendon on the weekend, and Geelong in the cricket, that is, stumps on day one at Windy Hill, the old Windy Hill. Geelong was all out for 258, and Essendon won for 37 at stumps.
Yes. Now, did you watch the big bike race over in South Australia at the weekend?
I didn't, but I am looking forward to the Cadell race. I saw some components on TV, but I didn't sit down and study it. What did you think?
I sat down and watched the whole race, and what a fantastic event, and the way it's conducted and everything like that.
Tour Down Under.
And the scenery, you know, like you see where the farmers are, you know, with their vines and everything like that. It's a wonderful occasion over there.
Is it Australia's version of the Tour de France over there?
Oh, yes, certainly does. And, you know, and the commentators are, you know, much the same too. You know, they give it a lot of publicity. And a wonderful race. And Richie Port, almost got there. Like, he's won the race, though. That's all that matters. Like, he got beaten in the mountain climb, you know, by a pom of all things. You know?
Of course, we've got the Vic Open Golf coming up in a few weeks. But down at the spectacular 13th Beach Golf Links on the Ballerine, and then that's going to be drawing in big names, and then the Women's Australian Open's also in South Australia. So there's been a bit of South Australian flavour to this program today. But as you said, the Cadella Evans road races on this weekend, and I've been noticing the signage around and the Asian language on actual signage, just so the riders know where they're going.
We better go to the final word, because Wes J's 45 RPM is coming up after the 11 o'clock news bucket.
Little S, now, like, is where you see do your best. I went to the Cry a Little S on Saturday, and gee, didn't those kids impress me? And the will to finish a race and things like that was just amazing. I did see one kid, I think he's from Werribee, I understand. He might be a national champion in days to come.
Ooh.
Over hurdles.
I heard
very,
about,
very good.
I heard about those little lads. My final word is wonderful sports events coming up in Geelong. Get around it the next couple of weeks. Obviously, the Cadell Evans Road Race, the golf. But quickly, with Barwon Heads and Port Arlington on the weekend and the cricket, Port Arlington won their first game for the season in A1. They won by 84 runs, defeating Barwon Heads. And they've been on the bottom of the ladder. They haven't won a game all season, and they won on the weekend.
Zach, the coach at Barwon Heads, is it?
Thank you very much. Coming up tomorrow on the program, a special outside broadcast from down at Janjuk with the Geelong Mayor, Stephanie Asher, and also the Mayor of Surf Coast, Councillor Rose Hodge. Talk to you then.
The Mitchell's Front Page podcast is brought to you by Geelong Bank. Listen live on 94.7 The Pulse, Mondays and Tuesdays from 9 to 11. Or search for Mitchell's Front Page on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or wherever you get your podcasts.